Fourth and final hour here on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's had a good day thus far. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. This time every Tuesday we head over to West End. Check in the Vanderbilt campus with our head football coach, Clark Lee. He is on the line with us. Coach, good afternoon. Thanks for doing this as always. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. You know, I think if anybody's ever played sports, whether it's football or anything, you've always had that humbling moment, that game that didn't go your way and got out of hand, and it's always how do you react after that? And as a coach, I'm just curious, what do you say to your kids after a game like that? Just, you know, to keep this thing moving. You knew what we've talked about it every week with you, but, you know, and when you have a game like that, what do you say to them?
Well, I mean, the first thing is, you know, everyone's emotional and everyone's frustrated, and that includes me. You know, the first thing is, you know, you try to push that back and just in the moment have an attachment to the vision and the journey you're on, and eventually, you know, you speak to the room and you make sure you speak to the hearts and minds that want to be. Both learn from the experience, but move on from it too. You know, how quickly can we put that game behind us to focus on, being our best for the next opponent? And you know, you have to relive it. You know, we do that on Mondays here. Sunday's an off day, and you relive it. You have honest conversations around it. I think each time we're out there, you know, and as painful as Saturday was, it's an indicator of where we are, and it's an expression of the things that we need to work on to improve upon, some big, some little, some tactical and some mindset driven. But like every time you're exposed that way, you target those things, you communicate them honestly, and then again, it becomes how quickly can we move on and find another level of performance.
When we had a game like that in baseball with our youth sports team, you know, a game that just was one-sided after that talk, and that's why I was curious how you would answer that. I was thinking, you know, what was I going to say to them? So we have the talk, and then seeing their reaction, that felt good. I was like, I do walking away. I was like, okay, we're going to be all right. They're going to be just fine. Did you? I know it's just Tuesday. It's Tuesday afternoon, but have you felt good? And Sunday was a day off, but have you felt good of how they have responded and reacted since the game?
Well, first of all, these guys are tough. They're tough. They're here to win. They're here to be competitive. Some of them had experienced something like that in their past. Some of them hadn't. Mm-hmm. I will find out a lot today when we actually get out on the practice field and go back to work. Am I dealing with a team that's licking its wounds, or am I dealing with a team that's on the rebound? And that'll be pretty easy to connect with. All of these moments, like here early on in this building of this program, I mean, these are opportunities to separate the real from the fake. And it's like, you get shocked that way on Saturday, and you take a step back and you say, okay, you set your jaw and you jump right back into the fire. And program wide, the people that are jumping back in with you, you know, are there for the same reasons that you are, and we're not going to let one result define us. I mean, listen, that was embarrassing and frustrating, and one that I'll never forget. And yet, I know, and I'm anxious to look back on that as a memory from a perch of success that I know is going to happen. And so, for me, it becomes how quickly can I get over myself, get over how I feel, and continue the climb here and continue to build, because we'll close the talent gap through recruiting and developing our team, and we got to close the mindset gap too, the psychology of being a great competitor and knowing that you go out, you expose yourself fully, you understand that there are going to be good results and bad results, but you know that you have pride in the way you represent yourself on a competitive level. And, those are things that we'll continue to teach around and build upon. But, we have to have, as coaches and as a team, the discipline to make choices in the moment to be the team that we know we're capable of being.
Coach Clark Lee is on the line with us, Vanderbilt football. And so, Coach, as the second half is going, it happens so fast that you're in a big hole, but I'm sure you're watching to see, how each individual handles it, who stands out and still battling, and still trying to make good things happen and stabilize the game. So what did you see in that department? Anybody stand out to you?
I think in review of the film, I saw – and I shared this with the team. I think in a losing effort, and as we're building a winning program, when you don't have results, it's easy to find individuals that stand out. I think when you do have results, it's going to be about unit performance and team performance and complementary football, and those are the things you're going to highlight. There's a collective effort that's missing right now that we have to establish. But certainly there were guys that on a competitive level stood out, that they were winning their one-on-ones. They were fighting and winning their one-on-ones and making a difference. Tyler Steen was the guy that stood out to me that played with edge. I thought Castillo and Cox inside were both O-linemen that were able to win and had a tough challenge that they responded to. Arrington Truesdell, a freshman, was a guy on coverage units, both kickoff coverage and kickoff return, that stood out. Defensively, Jalen Mahoney continues to be a guy that brings spirit and energy. Was very happy for him. I thought we got better play out of the safeties. I think there's still room for us to improve there and to continue to push. Michael Owusu probably played his best football since I've been here. I thought the two inside linebackers were warriors in fault through the finish. And that's not to say these were great games. I thought these were individuals that made the decision to compete over and over and over again. And you see the build. I mean, Rasan Wilkins and Nate Clifton are two guys inside, along with Davian Davis, that have been pretty consistent in their effort all year. For us, it's just, again, you now, four games in, have a better understanding of where the heartbeat is on your team. What are the psychological ailments that are holding us back? But who are the guys that are rising above that and are helping to form what the identity will be of this program? And for me, it's about speaking to those guys every day and allowing them to set the course for us so that we can have a stronger middle to this season. And we will, and again, we're anxious to get back on the field today and go back to work. I think on the whole, to this point, the response has been pretty good, but like I said, a lot to be determined today.
Clark, you, of course, having played in the program, can understand this. Of course, you grew up in Nashville, so you've seen this type of game come up sometimes. Your guys are hungry for a win. There's an opponent that you match up with, needless to say, much, much better with than the team that you just played. But at the same time, you've got a very hungry program in UConn probably saying, hey, we've got a chance to get a win. We need a win here. So tell me what's the mental part that's got to be right all week long to make sure your guys are ready to go and playing at your best on Saturday?
Well, I think one of the things that is holding us back is this idea that our preparation and process is determined by who we're playing. I think it's like we have to look at this like any other week, where what is going to lead to like a great result on Saturday? Well, the intensity and attention to detail and energy that we have today on that practice field is going to go a long way in dictating how we perform on Saturday. Saturdays are always kind of a measure of two things: their talent and their performance. And the sooner we connect with, a performance level, a consistency in performance that allows us to be at our best, right? And whatever our best is, how we measure up against each opponent is what it is. But if we play at our best, you have opportunities to win games. Right now, we're so inconsistent with that performance that, we go to Colorado State and we fight through adversity and we come out victorious we feel great about it. You turn around and you play Stanford and, you have every opportunity to win that game by seizing momentum heading into the half. and we give it right away. And until we perform at a consistent level, you know, we're not going to know what we're truly capable of here. And so, look, if we're playing Georgia again this weekend, if we're playing East Tennessee State, I mean, like, the lessons we've learned to this point is the opponent doesn't matter. When are we willing to step up and play Vanderbilt football? You know, how is this team going to look today coming out to start prep on the practice field for UConn? And are we focused on playing at the highest level and representing Vanderbilt football from an attitude and effort standpoint like that we know that we can? So those are kind of the challenges we have. And I think as this program matures, again, it'll be less about who we're playing and more about how we play. Because in the end, like you said, UConn is coming in here to steal a game on the road. And, you know, we have to, just like we learned against East Tennessee State and certainly against Stanford, that our opponents aren't going to cooperate with us. We have to go and take the game. And to do that on Saturday requires our attention here early in the week.
Coach, I as I watch the quarterbacks you're using, Mike Wright and Ken Seals, they both do different things really well. They have different skill sets. And this is a crazy outside-the-box question. But, you know, looking at how the Saints use a Taysom Hill, you know, there's been some examples through the years. Is there any way that you can incorporate both of them at the same time at all, especially with the unique skill set that Mike Wright has?
There is. And that's something we're, you know, like we're working through it. I think the, you know, there's so much on an identity level that we're building on offense that we want to make sure that we are attentive to that. But, and yet, like, coming out of Saturday, one of the things that we have to work on is our creativity and creating explosive plays. And so playing both those guys on the field at once certainly would help go a long way in that.
Talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, joining us here on Darren Donick and Chase. So through all of this, I mean, you talk about your players and what you're, you know, learning about them and expecting out of them, how they react to wins and losses. Through all of this, as a head coach, what have you learned about yourself and maybe some things that you know, you didn't know how you would react to some of the things you've gone through?
Well, I think it just that, you know, I'm a work in progress too. And for me, it's like, you know, each time I'm out there, each time I, you know, enter the arena with the team and I'm efforting the performance that I want from the guys, you know, I have to take time to learn and grow as well. And so for me, you know, I think the challenges that I knew were here, I've dealt with really well. I think the challenges that are revealing themselves as we go, I'm learning and adapting to as well. And the biggest thing for me is to enjoy the process of building a program. And that means, you know, the high moments at Colorado State, celebrate them. The low moments like this weekend, learn from them and flush it and, you know, keep building this team and keep building this program towards the vision and love the players along the way. And, you know, we're going to get there. It was a frustrating setback, but nothing that we can't overcome together.
One non-Vanderbilt question for you, because you spent so many years at Notre Dame. Brian Kelly passed Newt Rockne for the all-time coaching wins at Notre Dame, which is quite an accomplishment. And you think about, you know, all the years that he's been there, all the winning that you all did together. I mean, what did that mean to see him? Obviously, you're focused on your own thing, but to see him be able to do that and have that honor.
Well, I mean, look, I sent him a message on Saturday, and I just a message of congratulations and how proud I am of him, and you know, the time I spent with him. I think he's an underappreciated coach. Who's built a program that, you know, has really become a force in college football. And he's done it the right way. And he's done it through the weight room and done it through developing players. And, you know, I'm proud of Coach. I think what an unbelievable accomplishment for him, and something that I celebrate from here in Nashville. And I know, you know, as I work my way through the adversity that I'm sitting with now, you know, I draw from guys like BK and Dave Clawson and great head coaches that I've worked with that have been in these types of situations where, you know, they can offer great advice and wisdom on staying the course and, you know, keeping tethered to the vision and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I'm excited for Coach Kelly. I think it's what an unbelievable honor. And again, one of the more underappreciated head coaches in college football, in my mind. He's done an unbelievable job there. And obviously there are more wins to come for that program.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, go get him this weekend. Appreciate the time as always. And we will do it again next week.
Hey, you guys take care, and appreciate you, and talk to you soon.
Absolutely. That is Clark Lee, the head coach at Vanderbilt, joining us every Tuesday at 1 o'clock. When we come back, we will stick with the college football theme and talk to Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll do that when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 1025 The Game.
Don't forget to play silly underdog picks with us. We make our picks on Thursdays at noon. You get to pick three games. Remember, three underdog teams to win. They have to win their game outright to get the points. We've got weekly prizes. All you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com for more details to play. Silly Underdog Picks presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. We gave Forever Titan Chris Sanders a lot of grief. I was front and center of that line about taking UConn last week. They were getting 30.5, and we...
Oh boy!
You know, we took him out behind the radio woodshed and let him have it on air, and they lost by 2.
They had a like 2-point conversion to tie and didn't get it after losing the lead. They had the lead for most of the game.
Yeah, yeah. It would have. I don't know what we would have done if they would have won that game. And it was, first of all, that would have been silly underdog history, right? No one's ever won a 30.5 point spread game. I don't know what we.
I think we've had upper 20s, but I don't think we've ever had anything over 30.
You think upper 20s? I know.
Yeah, there was a win. This was in the 1990s. Somebody had I think Rob Fessmeyer had an Ole Miss team against Georgia or something like that. It was like 29.5 or something.
Really?
Like that. That's what sticks out.
I thought Chris
in my mind.
Hit one with Vandy a few
he
years
did.
Ago.
It was
he
in the
did.
20s.
Against Missouri.
It was in the
20s. It was 21.
Yeah.
It was 21. Vanderbilt against Missouri. But ironically, I bring that up because Connecticut is the next opponent, and Vanderbilt will be hosting them on Saturday. We bring in Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good. Darren, hope you're well.
Yeah, everything is good. Let's start with the game that was down in Jerry's world in Dallas, Arkansas and A&M. A lot of people, this was not a great surprise. I think this was kind of like a sexy upset pick, and it played out. Arkansas looks really good. They're a top 10 team. One, just talk about what you see in them right now, and two, how about the coordinators they have on the offense and defensive side of the ball that are looking really, really good right now for Sam Pittman?
Yeah, that is something I was going to go to. And, you know, Sam Pittman, a lot has been made of the hire there and kind of no one saw it coming and obviously how he did a great job last year and all that. And the fact that he did not have experience even as a coordinator, how important it was going to be for him to make good hires. And he definitely did. And again, this is nothing to say, take away from Pittman because he has those guys believing and all that. But I don't think enough has been made about, you know, Kendall Briles is, you know, comes with a little bit of baggage from his time at Baylor with his dad and all that, but he is a you know, very, very highly respected coordinator. And then Barry Odom, you know, we kind of dismiss him a little bit because his Missouri tenure didn't go great, but he was a great defensive coordinator under Gary Pinkel at Missouri. Great job at Memphis, and you know, going to Arkansas has been great there. And the thing about this staff, they inherited a team that was probably one of the worst Power 5 programs at the time as far as losing streak, but it wasn't without talent. And we all know that to be the case at Arkansas. They don't recruit clearly like the top teams in the league, but they recruit consistently at a top 25 level. So I think it was like a perfect storm of Sam Pittman coming in, his message resonating, hiring a really good staff, taking over a roster that was far more talented than the results on the field, and then they experienced some immediate success. Now, you know, they lost the opener last year to Georgia, but it was clear that they were a different team. So then it's sort of like when you enjoy success right away, players start believing even more, and then, more so even this year. And the fact that, you know, KJ Jefferson, I think, has been better. I know they had high hopes for him internally, but I think he's been better than anyone thought he would be at the quarterback position. Hopefully he's healthy after getting banged up, but they were really good. And that was, you know, you can look, A&M has athletes all over the place too. They're not great at the quarterback position right now, but there was nothing fluky about that game. You know, I watched probably 2/3 of it flipping around and stuff, but you know, I'm not, if they played 10 times, does Arkansas win 8, 7? I don't know, but they were clearly the better team on Saturday.
They'll get a break, though. They'll get the week off, though, after that big win. Oh, wait a minute. No, they've got to go to Athens and take on Georgia. Then they get to go to Oxford and take on Ole Miss.
Then they go to Ole Miss. Look, I mean, Arkansas goes to Ole Miss after that.
Right.
Then Auburn.
Right.
I mean, and then Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Mississippi State, then at LSU, at Alabama. I mean, we always talk about life in the SEC West is brutal enough. And then when one of your crossover teams is Georgia, which is one of the most talented rosters we've seen in college football in the last 20 years. I don't know if they'll be one of the 20 best teams, but as far as roster talent, they're up there with anybody.
We just had Clark Lee on, and at the end of that interview, Chase brought up Notre Dame and their big win. And by the way, shame on us. None of us took Notre Dame and silly underdogs. What were they getting, six and a half?
6.5, yeah.
None of us took Notre Dame, and they cruised to a 41-13 victory over Wisconsin. But you think about Brian Kelly's body of work. I don't know if underrated's the right word, Mitch, but people seem to want to, you know, I don't know. They don't heap a ton of praise towards Brian Kelly. They certainly I feel like we all doubt Notre Dame a lot, right? Like, oh, they're really not that good. Like, we do a lot of that over the years. But I'll tell you what, since he's been their head coach, there's one thing you can't knock Brian Kelly. His teams are consistent, man. They are consistently good, and they may not win the big ones all the time, and we know their playoff woes. But why do you think that is? And, oh, by the way, they've got another big one this week as they host Cincinnati.
Yeah, well, you're preaching to the choir on Brian Kelly. I've been a fan of his. You know, I remember dating back to his Central Michigan days, and that program was terrible. He got them good immediately, enjoyed immediate success at Cincinnati, and then has been pretty good at Notre Dame, like you mentioned. A couple things. He, you know, early in his tenure, he was more of a hothead. You know, pictures of him on the sideline with his face about the, you know, veins popping out, red, you know, vessels bursting and all that. So I think people like to poke fun at that. And, you know, it's just it's Notre Dame. People love him. People love to hate him. And, you know, he did have that. They dipped, went 4-8 one year, kind of reinvented himself, and has been, ever since then, they've been very consistent. And, you know, there's said many times in the last few years, sure, they lost in the playoff badly, but a lot of teams in that position would have lost the teams they played badly. Just because they got blown out by Clemson and Alabama in the playoff doesn't mean they didn't deserve it. You plug any team in there, those teams would have lost those games too, probably. So, yeah, Notre Dame's kind of found its little sweet spot there. Playoff expansion goes to 12 when we think it will in a few years. I expect them to be a consistent playoff team. You know, I don't know how much longer Brian Kelly is going to coach. He's not that young. He's not that old either. But, yeah, I agree with you that I think nationally people kind of, I don't want to say dismiss, but just don't maybe appreciate how good of a career he's had.
Yeah. NC State, double-digit underdog at home in Raleigh. They beat Clemson. In double overtime. Clemson's 2-2, and they obviously have not looked great. Their offense, it looks just pathetic. It's just weird seeing Clemson like this. Is this just a really, really slow start, and all of a sudden they're going to turn into gangbusters the rest of the way, or is this what Clemson is, and they're like a 7-5 team?
Yeah, I don't know if they're 7-5, but this is what they are. They're just not a good offensive team right now. You know, one thing about them, their offensive line has not been great in recent years. So you take away Travis Etienne and Trevor Lawrence, and the offensive line hasn't gotten any better, and they're not as dynamic at wide receivers as they've been. That explains the offense. You know, Will Shipley's a five-star freshman running back they brought in from North Carolina. High hopes for him. He broke into the starting lineup, but he might be great down the line, but he's not having, you know, the effect that some people thought he would have. Clearly, he's not Travis Etienne. And this one thing about Clemson's rise is, they always had the superstar quarterback, whether, you know, it was Deshaun Watson for a few years, Trevor Lawrence. You just think when they did not have it, the one year it was Kelly Bryant, they were still good. They made the playoff, but their offense wasn't very good. And then this year, you know, So they've recruited well, but they have not recruited quite at the level of Georgia, you know, Ohio State, Alabama. So their overall roster talent isn't as good as those super elite teams that when they're not getting good quarterback play, that they're just going to be, you just plug them in. So again, I think 7-5 is a little bit of overreaction, but this is not a playoff team. Clearly, it's not a good offensive team.
This is going to be a big one in Lexington this Saturday.
The question or the game?
No, just the game. The game. I don't think it's going to be.
But the question was going to be a big one. Okay.
Well, no, I just want to get your thoughts on. It's going to be an electric atmosphere. Kentucky's hosting Florida. Florida looks better than I think we initially thought, and here's Mark Stoops in Kentucky flying under the radar again. We're so used to, oh, it's Kentucky football. You know, basketball season's just around the corner. Well, they're 4-0. Can they actually pull this upset off, or does Florida get them?
I'll disagree with you on one thing, Darren. I think Kentucky's not really flying under the radar. I think nationally a lot of people, even there's some people out there that picked them maybe to finish second in the East, to battle Florida for second in the East. The one thing, and you're
I picked them
well
in second.
There you go. You're well aware of this rivalry. For years and years, it just Kentucky would come painfully close and then literally forget to cover wide receivers like for Florida, and Florida would just beat them in the weirdest ways possible. Now, they finally kicked that door down and won. Now, that was in Gainesville. It wasn't a home game. But so not that that should affect this game or this series or ever, but I think the weight of the losing streak against Florida is not on this team, so they can just kind of focus on winning the game. The problem for Kentucky is I think Florida's really good and better than I thought they would be offensively. Emory Jones has been very, very good at quarterback. I think what last week against Tennessee, 200 yards passing, 100 yards rushing. He settled in a little bit there. You know, Anthony Richardson could be back at some point. I don't think they're great at running back, but their offense seems to be humming. But Kentucky has been good offensively. You know, Will Levis gets a lot of pub. A lot of people talk about him from his banana eating skills and his big right arm. You know, what they did not look great last week. They only scored 16 points at South Carolina. Not a great – South Carolina's got a good defensive line, but they're not great defensively other than that. They only scored 28 against Chattanooga. So I'm intrigued by this game. It's a great docket on Saturday. I'm not going to say this is the game I'm looking forward to the most, but I think this is, like you said, Darren, a really, really good game. I'm picking Florida just because I think their offense is really good, and I've been a little alarmed by Kentucky's offense the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, 33-1 is just doesn't sound as good as 34-0, you know. So yeah, Florida,
no doubt,
33 of the last 34 meetings. Yikes.
Yep.
It spans a long time. We're talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, talking college football as we do every week at this time. So Mitch, I wanted to try to put in perspective, because there's different levels of rebuilding, especially when it comes to Vanderbilt football. You and I have seen a lot of them. And after a game like Saturday, where it was just so tough to watch, I mean, I was there. I went to the game. It unraveled so quick. I don't think I've ever seen a game get that lopsided that quick. And, of course, you're playing one of the best in Georgia. But it got me thinking a little bit of what did Clark Lee inherit? Because I don't know that it's fair to have this be a reflection on what he's doing right now, because I just don't see, even relative to other Vanderbilt teams, the talent level. It's really sketchy right now.
Yeah, there's so much more to, you know, talent is obviously a huge part of the equation, Willie, and coaches, certain coaches, like we talked about Sam Pittman, have the effect where they can come in and they can, you know, get everyone on the same page and everyone's, you know, the message is resonating and all that, and that's great. But when it comes down to it, you got to have some players. And I agree. I look at this roster and I don't know if there's an NFL player on the roster. Maybe some of the young guys, maybe Davion Davis is the guy I know they're really high on, although, you know, his production hasn't been great. So you look at the roster and it's just not there. And then, you know, you're going against the Georgia roster. It's kind of a perfect storm in a bad way. One of the that's probably the most talented Georgia team Vanderbilt's ever played, or in the past 20 years. And this is probably the least talented Vanderbilt team. So when things go bad early, they're going to unravel. You know, we've talked about this a lot, and I did a little research earlier today. The 2000, because, you know, a lot of Vanderbilt fans rightfully will say, well, look what James Franklin did his first year. They go 6-7, and, you know, took over a team that went 2-9. And that argument That's a fine argument. I'll ask you, Willie, how many NFL, future NFL players do you think were on the first James Franklin? James Franklin inherited ex-NFL players on that 2011 team.
Well, just off the top of my head, they had Jordan Matthews, they had Zach Stacy, they had Casey Hayward. So that's the first three that just pop into my head. Three really, really good players. Now, of course, that's only three, but I think there were some others.
Jonathan Goff on that team?
No. Goff was Bobby Johnson.
He was not, but there were some offensive linemen. Go ahead, tell us the answer.
Okay. The answer is 10.
10.
And does not include Chris Marv, who was a three-time All-SEC player who just, it was weird. He said maybe he just wasn't a prospect. He didn't even go to, like, the combine. Like, he didn't
was Earl Bennett on that team or no?
No. So, all correct, because Zach Stacy running back, three offensive linemen, Ryan Seymour, Wesley Johnson, and Spencer Pulley. And these guys weren't just a cup of coffee in the NFL. They've all played multiple years. Brandon Barden at tight end, Jordan Matthews on defense, four guys in the secondary, Kenny Ladler, Casey Hayward, Andre Howe, and Sean Richardson. All those guys were in their third year of the program or more. So it wasn't like, okay, yeah, that guy's a future NFL player, but he's a freshman who didn't play. So, again, this is just kind of frame of reference. Give James Franklin, I'm a huge James Franklin fan. He deserves all the credit in the world for turning things around so quickly. But it's not apples to apples, the roster. You know, Bobby Johnson did a very sneakily good, that's not really a word, but recruiting job later in his tenure. And a lot of that was after breaking through in 2008 and going to a bowl game and showing, hey, you can come here and go play in the postseason. Now, most of these guys weren't that highly rated, so give that staff credit for identifying guys. And then, you know, Franklin's staff, and I've talked to Bob Shoup about this in the past, they developed some of those guys too. And, you know, Bob Shoup used to always tell me they just inherited a really good group of guys, really coachable group of guys who bought into what they were doing. So, you know, in this current roster, will one of these guys, multiple guys, make the NFL? Who knows? Some of them, you know, a lot of young guys are playing. But I knew sort of the numbers there, but I was even surprised when I looked it up. And then real quick, frame of reference, Bobby Johnson took over in 2002 a roster that had five future NFL players. Jay Cutler, Justin Geisinger, offensive lineman, Javon Hay, Hunter Hillenmeyer, and Rushen Jones.
Yeah, and that first year was really rough for Bobby Johnson. You had a true freshman in Jay Cutler that just sort of...
Redshirt freshman.
A redshirt freshman, yes.
Yeah,
and fortunately for him, for Bobby Johnson, he had a quarterback at least that had some talent there. So it's just interesting to compare the different things, the hand that you're dealt. And with that said, Mitch, a lot of people will say, well, hey, you know, with this transfer rule, can you not make it happen quicker? Can you go get some guys that are not getting playing time at different places and maybe speed up a rebuild? So what's Clark Lee and his philosophy on that front?
Well, that's going to be interesting because he has said he is not they don't intend to hit the transfer portal very hard. I wouldn't say they're not going to do it at all, but he wants the guys to bring in and kind of develop in their system and their culture. But that's in today's game, that's difficult to do. And not saying you don't need to be like Michigan State this year, it's like 14 starters or something like that who are transfers. I don't think that's not healthy in the long term for any program. But I actually thought Derek Mason late in his tenure did a good job grabbing some grad transfers from Ivy League schools who kind of they plugged in and weren't big time players but were contributors. And he got hurt, but Raymond Davis, the running back who was one of Vanderbilt's best offensive players, was a transfer from Temple who transferred in before the coaching change last year. So that's going to be something interesting to watch if this staff kind of stays true to their belief that they don't want to bring in a lot of transfers, because you're inevitably going to lose some every year. And it's not a Vanderbilt problem. It's a college. It's across the board there. So if you're not bringing a lot in and you might lose a starter or two every year, you know, just kind of do the math there. So that will be something to monitor going forward.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic, talking some college football. All right, the game of the week that I am so pumped about, Ole Miss, Alabama, in Tuscaloosa. Lane Kiffin looking to become the first Saban assistant to beat him. It hasn't happened to this point. They had a shootout last year. So on a scale of no chance to I can't believe what I just saw, where would you put Ole Miss's chances of winning this game?
Much closer to, how do you phrase it? I can't believe what I just saw. I think it's going to be a really good game, a really entertaining game. You know, we saw what Florida did running the ball against Alabama. Ole Miss has a good running game. You know, we think of Matt Corral, and not just him running, but they've recruited very well at the running back position. This is a legit offense. And, you know, we saw last year they couldn't stop Alabama defensively. They scored, 40-something points on them. Great game. Frustrated Nick Saban, but they were right there, and they're better this year. And this is not an original stat. A friend of mine, Bill Troche, who Willie knows well, just texted me this before, and I hope Bill wasn't going to use it on anything because I'm stealing it right now. But the last team to beat Nick Saban in the regular season while throwing at least one interception was 2000 LSU, the 9-6 overtime game. So basically you have to be perfect to beat Alabama in the regular season.
That is quite the stat. Do you think – it's funny because we talked to Vince Ferrara earlier, who covers the Vols in Knoxville that we have every week. He feels like Ole Miss is going to beat Alabama. He said, I think Ole Miss is going to win, is how he worded it. So to hear you say that makes me even wonder even more if this could possibly happen. So is that because you think – you know what Ole Miss's offense is, but are you that – impressed by their defense or see an improvement in their defense that makes you think they can hang?
Improvement. You know, we saw what they did to Louisville in week one, and Louisville ended up scoring 24 points, but a lot of that was late. Tulane's a pretty good offensive team. We saw what they did to Oklahoma, though Oklahoma's, you know, you can debate how good they are, but they're not, obviously they still have Oklahoma talent. So they're clearly improved. Now, that's a team that plugged some guys in the transfer portal. They didn't go crazy there, but they plugged some fits in there that they look for specific fits at different positions, and that's panned out there. So it's a little bit of it's a combination of a little bit of everything, Chase. That I think Ole Miss is really good. I think they're obviously legit on offense, improved on defense. Alabama showing a little bit of vulnerability. Now this might be a Nick Saban game where he just does what Eli Manning did on national TV last night to everybody and just says we're still Alabama, and they're up 28 to 7 in the second quarter. And then we're all wondering why we thought Ole Miss was going to win. But on paper, I'm excited to watch this game.
You're saying Lane is going to do a double barrel?
No, I think Saban's going to do figuratively, not literally.
Oh, well, Eli right. did.
That's going to be what he's going to show the world. Like, we're still Alabama. Nice try, Ole Miss.
I love the way he did it, and then goes, we can do that, right? They can just blur it out, and it's like, yeah, Eli,
it's
you already did
it.
There's not a delay.
Oh, that was fantastic. Always appreciate
by
Mitch.
By the way, you guys know who, I'm sure that's Eli Manning's old man cave down there. Do you know who his neighbor is?
Who his neighbor is?
Willie could probably guess.
This is in New Jersey, right? Or Newark, or wherever.
Al Leiter.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Long story short, when my son had a high school baseball game this year against Chris McElwain's brother, Ethan McElwain, at Nolensville, I put something on Facebook like, hey, Gabe's baseball game, he's playing against the Vanderbilt commit. Some friend of mine from high school, a girl's like, oh, my daughter went to elementary school with a Vanderbilt baseball player, Jack Leiter. I was like, well, yeah, I know who Jack Leiter is. So I said, hey, what's that? And she said, the funny thing is he's not even the most famous person on the street. So, Eli Manning was across the street.
Eli's got dibs, I guess, in the big picture. Two Super Bowls.
Some good stick wiffle ball games on that street.
Man, it's a high level.
Mitch, good stuff as always, man. Have a good rest of your day.
All right, take care, guys. See ya.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll come back and wrap up the show. By the way, there's some stuff out there Adam Schefter put out about Marlon Mack. Spot Rack has also put out some stuff about Marlon Mack, so we'll discuss that. And Philip Forsberg has also talked to the media about his future here. So a lot of things to get to wrap up this Tuesday edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. But first, speaking of Chase,
he's
got a word about BetMGM.
I sure do, because let me tell you what to do. I have had some fun using the one-game parlay feature. It has worked well for me. I've missed just a couple of things too, but you can bet on more than the final score during football season with one game parlay at BetMGM. It's an exciting feature designed to help you make selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including my favorite, team and player props. All you have to do is log into your BetMGM account, create your best parlay before the game starts. One game parlay is the fast and easy way to combine your same-game win, total, and prop picks. If you're new to BetMGM, sign up today and make your first bet risk-free up to $1,000. All you have to use is the bonus code 1025GAME. You can place one-game parlay bets on pro and college football, baseball, soccer, and more. Go ahead and take your favorite player to score, the home team to cover, and the over and touchdowns. Log in today or download the BetMGM app to try one-game parlay. New customer offer paid in free bets. You must be 21 years or older, must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Croatian CBD. Croatian CBD, products curated for life. Chase, tell everybody where you're going to be tailgating on Saturday.
You know, that's a great question you bring up. I am going
to
be
at the Brew House West.
I know where I'm going to be. I was just setting it up. You know, I know where I'm going to be. I'm going to be at the Brew House West, which is on Charlotte Pike. One of my favorite hangouts. I go in there all the time. So
sure.
I do. I really do. It's right by my house. So I will be in there starting around 2:30 for Ole Miss Alabama. Cannot wait for that matchup. So come by, say hello. Had some good turnouts the last couple weeks since we started this. Chasers tailgate. They'll have beer specials and great food, and you can hang out with me. So come on by and let's watch some football.
This is a really good weekend, by the way.
Oh, I love the matchups.
This is a really good weekend. I think we'll have lots to choose from on Thursday for sure.
I mean, Cincinnati, Notre Dame, and Ole Miss, Alabama are going to be happening at the same time.
Yeah, that's a shame too, by the way.
I know.
Adam Schefter tweeted out, one reason the Colts running back Marlon Mack did not play on Sunday is because, he said, per league sources, the team is considering trading him. Mack's on a one-year deal. He's healthy and still can be productive. According to SpotRack, Marlon Mack has $833,000 left on his remaining one-year deal with the Colts. A trade this week would leave behind $1.16 million of dead cap to Indy.
Hmm. So, I mean, the team that acquires him, that's a
– yeah, it's a tradable. No-brainer. It's a very tradable contract, which is very hard to find these days in the NFL. Most of the people who are on the trade deadline – there's a reason, and usually it's related to the contract, but this is a very tradable contract.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
What does that mean for the price, though?
You know, that's the question.
Right.
You know, that might make it easier for the Colts to shop around and say, well, what are you going to give us? If they can get a couple, three different teams competing who really need a running back, that is what the Colts would be looking for.
I think the Ravens are definitely going to be in the market. There's no doubt about that. I'm trying to think of, I mean, Seattle. I wasn't impressed with their running game. I know they're 1-2, but they're still good. Could they use a little help back there? Yeah, I think they could. I think that's a team that could show some interest. I mean, what about the Rams? I mean, I know they're 3-0, but they did lose Cam Akers for the season. I mean, I don't know. Are they satisfied with everything? I don't know.
I mean, Sony Michel wasn't
they
bad.
They did. You're right. They did trade for Sony Michel, so that's a good point. So
but
maybe
what is he? That I was curious about Sony Michel, but that's an interesting one. The Rams. That's an interesting one.
I mean,
because I don't know if they're that thrilled about Sony Michel right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I don't know if they are either. I mean, think about it. They're going for it. I mean, they know they're
good.
Yeah,
this is an all in thing.
They're all in. I mean, they've already been all in. They have not been afraid to make moves. We know that. I mean, think about it. Jalen Ramsey got there via trade. Matthew Stafford got there via trade. They're not afraid to go out there and go for it.
I think Maddox is going to graduate high school by the time they pick in the first round again.
Yeah, that's a good point. This pace, well, they're not going to give up a first-round pick for Marlon Mack. He's going to come on the cheap. I'm trying to think. Patriots lost James White. I don't know how long he's going to be out for a while. I mean, maybe the Patriots have interest. Do the Titans have any interest? Don't know. I think they should have some interest. I don't know. I mean, Adam Schefter just tweeted out he's healthy and still can be productive.
I think we can have this discussion tomorrow too, because I was thinking about this when you brought up Marlon Mack and the Titans. We're getting to that point where, you know, you're almost a month into the season. This is when you really start to see what you have as a team, where you are health-wise. I mean, we've talked about all that, but it's also in the last few years where you start to see trades happen around the NFL, and the Titans have been active at the trade deadline. They have made some acquisitions. We remember King last year when they needed help at corner. You know, they got him. So are there some names that are going to be popping up out there that maybe John Robinson would want to look at as the season goes on? I think is it still week eight is the trade deadline? I know we got a while, but I'd be curious, you know, to discuss that.
Philip Forsberg today was asked at camp, is it still a goal of his to finish his career here and to be a part of this team moving forward? And said, are you still wanting that, or is this a wait-and-see approach? Philip Forsberg responded by saying, I have no rush to sign. I mean, I still have a full year. I don't know. I feel like you have to play your contract out. Obviously, I have a full year. I love this place. I've loved every minute since I got here. I definitely feel like we have a really good opportunity to make something great, not just this year, but going forward as well. Like, you know, it is business, and everything is going to have to be handled properly like that. That's I was reading those quotes from Robbie Stanley that tweeted that out.
Hi, I'm a non-committal answer. Nice to meet you. But
well,
what do you expect?
I don't know what you want him to say.
I mean, yeah, what do you expect him to say?
Yeah.
It's not a bad answer if you're trying to, you know, not necessarily not dodge the question, but give an answer, non-answer. So.
Well, I guess the way I viewed it is he did kind of give something. I'm in no rush to sign.
Yeah, I think it's a wait and see.
They're not even close to anything.
I think you're right. So. I think that's fair to say.
All right, guys, good show. Good stuff. That'll do it for our show today. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.